Welcome to the Daily French Show, offering insightful and thought-provoking news commentary and analysis from a classically liberal centrist perspective. The show is brought to you by the Institute of Race Relations. Tune in every Monday to Thursday for engaging discussions from our team of analysts and researchers that you won't find anywhere else.
Another episode of the Daily French Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today by the wise and venerable, or at least the aspirantly wise and venerable, Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you?
I mean, I'm going to be completely honest. When you started with that intro, I thought you were going to Sara first, because he couldn't start.
Not so much of a venerable.
Yes, I was just thrown, but he fixed it. I'm aspiring to a person, that's me.
Yeah, you. You've got an old soul, Herman. And of course, the
hello.
masterful and brilliant Sargon. Sarah, how are you?
You redeemed yourself, Nicholas. Well,
it's very much a before and after. It's very much a before and after. In a sense that I'm the before, and then when I one day become a Jewish lady, I will be wise.
who knows what Marvel's technology will bring in the future, Herman? Maybe your dreams will come true. Anyway, let us start off our story today and another new exciting week of South African news. Thankfully, something happened over the weekend, as the end of last week was rather dull. One thing I thought about talking about, but we're not going to actually talk about today, is the very unexpected death of the Queen Regent, who is managing the affairs of the Zulu Nation while they pick their new king. So that's probably going to cause some drama. But of course, the story we're going to start with today, and what you'll see in the title, is, of course, you may be wondering, some of you, who DD is. Well, that is, of course, our deputy president, David Mabuza, whose initials are actually DD, not DM. Anyway, he is being investigated by the Federal Bureau of Investigations in the United States and the South African Special Investigating Unit, I think, over allegations that General Electric paid to his foundation 30 million rand. So Eskom was contracted General Electric to build some turbines at the Kusile power plant, and this contract is now being investigated. Both General Electric and the DD Mabuza Foundation say that the donation was in fact never paid and there was no influence or improper behavior here on the awarding of the contract. There's a lot more detail to go into here, but let's start off with you, Sara. What do you make of this? David Mabuza has had many things alleged against him before. Do you think this one is going to stick at all?
Oh God, who knows? I mean, he's amazing. There've been allegations of involvement in murder, corruption, racketeering. I think he's been alleged to have done a whole lot of things, which have, to my knowledge, nothing has stuck yet. This one is quite funny. I mean, I wouldn't want to be investigated by the FBI, but be that as it may, there's something really funny. There's a letter from the Eskom, a manager of the Kusile project, I think, or one of the projects.
A guy called Frank Sitole.
Yeah, and he writes a letter. They have a copy of a letter, the News 24, and it goes like this: "Dear Sir Stroke Madam, it gives me pleasure to acknowledge your pledge to contribute 100 million rand to the project's CSI program. I can assure you, et cetera, et cetera. We would like to draw on this commitment an amount of 30 million as a strategic donation to the DD Mabuza Foundation. Now, it's supposed to help disadvantaged youth and with employment, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there are two things that are funny about that. First of all, it may be small change to Americans, but 100 million rand to a CSI project is quite, gee whiz, astonishing. I mean, really, corporate social investment, wow. Okay, and the other thing is he says, "Dear Sir Stroke," now, I would have thought that anyone giving you that amount of money, you would know their name and gender, and you would be able to address them as "Dear Mr. So-and-so" or "Dear Ms. So-and-so." But, you know, it's a case of he said they didn't, she said they did, or vice versa. I'm sure somebody will uncover the truth. Or
there's something very ominous about the phrasing strategic donation. What is a strategic donation?
A strategic donation is presumably a donation given to make sure that your name goes to the top of the list in building the six turbines at the one or other plant. Strategic.
Definitely. So this is going to be, I think, this is quite the pickle that General Electric has gotten itself into, especially now with the FBI on top of it as well. So it's not just South African authorities who don't always have a great track record at hunting down corruption, but now there's foreign agencies involved as well. So I think that's a good thing, because it means that the South African political scene will only have a limited impact on investigations into this. Herman, what do you make of this story? Do you think that David Mabuza might be in a bit of trouble here? Will anyone hold him to account?
Well, I must say the Mr. Sithole claims that the Mabuza Foundation and claims that the amount was never paid. So there's this interesting thing where it's attempted bribery. It's a useful thing in South Africa where you make yourself guilty of all kind of devious things like murder and attempted murder and conspiracy, because by comparison, things like attempted bribery look quite tame. It reminds me of the one gangster threatened the priest when his brother died and said, tomorrow, for I was on the verge of doing an accent until I realized it would probably be horrible. But he said, tomorrow at the funeral of my brother, father, Flattity or whatever, you will say my brother was a decent, good and honorable man. And then the father, the next day he said, today we bury so-and-so. He was a philanderer. He was a murderer. He was corrupt. He was a killer. He was awful. He was a drug dealer. But compared to his brother, he is a good, decent, and honorable man. And it's sort of, it's just the saturation of this sort of scandal in South Africa has really become problematic. And it goes back to 1999 with the arms deal. And it's been a never-ending story of corruption being a boring issue. In any other, in a functioning democracy, a scandal like this will be enough to ruin a political career. In South Africa, it makes your career. It really is important to be plugged into that patronage network. Now, on the one hand, you must understand it from the fact that I don't think they think strategic donations are anything wrong, because it's a part and parcel of doing business with the ANC. It's just how they function. And that's one of the problems when you go from illegal liberation movement to government, is I think there's an institutional memory for lawlessness, whether the law is meritorious or not, that survives. You're above certain things. So that's the one problem. It is endemically ANC type patronage functional, operations that we see here. And then the second thing is, I don't think anything will happen. I mean, this is small fry compared to the arms deal, of which nothing came. I mean, the Seriti Commission is the most valuable doorstop in the history of South Africa, because it produced this report that is just useless. So the sad thing is that South Africans must understand two things. This is the cost of doing business with the ANC, and the problem is corporates have never found a South African government they don't like. And number two, I doubt anything will happen, because bigger things have happened with no results.
Right. I think also there's a point here about how BEE it really is used as a mask for corruption. So we, in the letter that's written to General Electric here, says that the foundation, this is David Mabuza's foundation, is focused on financing young people's education, and then explained, adding, your donation will be acknowledged and can be claimed as broad-based black economic empowerment spend in socioeconomic development element of your scorecard. So this is exactly how critics of BEE like us say that the system works, is the black people being benefited here are already politically connected and very well off. And in return for this, a company is being privileged above others, perhaps. Sara, any thoughts on that sentiment?
Well, let's put it this way. I think Herman's right. I don't think anything's going to come of it. And it, the money may or may not have actually ended up in the account. But I imagine a man like Mr. Sithole would not have, in writing, earmarked the Mabuza Foundation if it wasn't agreed or negotiated that that is what would happen. That's quite a commitment to purport to make. If nothing, you know, if you don't have any agreement from the person in whose name the foundation is, I think one thing we should put on the list is that no one involved in political office should have a foundation. We know where that leads, Zuma Mieni, etc. And I think the other thing is it's a bit of a lesson for GE, because, you know, any form of corruption inside or outside of America is open to investigation in America. So the American any American company that does this sort of thing is, they're going to probably get into a lot more trouble than Didi Mabuza will.
Definitely. It is worth saying, though, that a lot of this has not yet been proven. This letter has been, its authenticity has been denied by the people accused in it. And so there will obviously need to be an investigation. And I would say that it's not entirely impossible in the very cutthroat politics of the ANC that someone might have faked something like this. So, Herman, any concluding thoughts on what you think should happen next?
Yeah, what I think should happen next is a proper investigation. But I mean, that's sort of disconnected from what is likely to happen. I mean, as you point out, we don't know the facts on this. And the challenge for South Africa, or for the last, you know, whatever amount of years, is that something like this could very well be true. I mean, this would be, this is perfectly in tune with things like Mercedes-Benz for R1. Was it Yengeni or someone? You know, it's so in line with things that have been proven to be completely factual in court, and then, you know, the ANC present to both carry in and out their prisoners of, you know, corrupt war. But the real problem here, and I think this goes back to Cyril Ramaphosa last week at the Zondo Commission, the ANC has managed to make things like this boring, things like this procedural, mundane. And I think that's the genius of the Zondo Commission. It just, you know, it saps the life out of you, and it just makes country-wrecking corruption uninteresting. It achieves this through just being so, I don't know, constant and at volume. So right. I might be terribly cynical, but I don't think anything's going to come from this.
No, and you can actually see it in the short.
Can I just say, the tedium of last week had to be interrupted by Norma Gigaba. I mean, that was pure soap opera.
Yes. I must say that, you know, women scorned and all that. Now we're just hoping there's a scorned woman somewhere in Mabuza's past, because, you know,
that's what scorned women
would be brilliant. And if I mean, that topic Nick mentioned at the beginning, the Zulu King, there's some scorned wives there. So I must say, in South African politics, yeah, corruption, but don't you strike a woman, scorned. You strike a rock.
I must say, this effect you're talking about kind of dampening down the enthusiasm for talking about corruption stories. You can see it even in the comments sections of some of the videos that we do, some of the podcasts we do. People say things like, you know, they'll just lie. Everyone's corrupt. People have, in a lot of senses, just given up, and they just roll their eyes when they hear another corruption story. I know I'm certainly guilty of that.
Nick, can I quickly just add something here? And this is the sort of weird disconnect that people should address, is corruption is a symptom. It's not the problem. Corruption is a symptom of a massive state. If the state's the biggest spender, the state's going to be the biggest looter. If the state has so much power over so much money and so many contracts, it is going to be inevitable that you get corruption and bribery as a consequence. So if you want to solve this problem, it's a policy problem. It's not an honesty or an IQ or whatever problem it is. It's a problem of policy. If you're going to put the hands if you're going to make the state the biggest spender, it's going to be the biggest looter. It was ever thus. It was the case in the Kriya regering. It is the case in the Ramaphosa government.
Well said. All right, let us move on now to a story which one of our colleagues actually commented on, Michael Morris. And this is after a report that the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants has commissioned a comprehensive independent study to understand why African students, and by African students, I mean black students, are failing competency tests. This follows the release of their latest assessment for professional competency report. So they say that they're commissioning a comprehensive independent study to understand the root cause of problems and, if necessary, review the full value chain of the qualification processes. Together with our stakeholders, including the Association for the Advancement of Black Accountants of Southern Africa and the African Women Chartered Accountants, we continue to implement initiatives to support candidates in order to close the inequality gap and ensure there's no prospective chartered accountant left behind. So there's a lot of corporate mumbo jumbo in there, but that's not really saying much. but some people have already pointed the finger and they say they know what the cause of this is. A man called Simpiwe Natlasana, who is the managing director of an accounting firm which is named after him, believes that this is all driven by a lack of confidence that young black chartered accountants have due to stereotypes and biases in the industry. He said, and he's quoted in IOL saying this, the report isn't surprising. Black students fear accounting or see it as a subject that is challenging, and they have no confidence that they can excel. It has always been deemed as an elite subject only fit for certain races or people of certain social status. He goes on to say, particularly in the Western Cape, black candidates are denied opportunities and treated poorly in the workspace, and you are intentionally made to feel unwelcome. This is very discouraging. You have to work for a white company to secure good projects. Our colleague Michael Morris was quoted as saying that we're kind of missing the point here in that the biggest problem is actually the South African schooling system. Morris said, the biggest problems are in state schools serving the poorest, most of whom are black. White pupils are almost four times more likely than black pupils to pass maths in matric with a rate of 50% and above. In 2020, 74.5% of black pupils passed matric compared to 97.8% of white candidates. A difference the report describes to the poor quality of teaching and poor facilities, mainly in public schools. So, Herman, let me start with you. Obviously, we think Michael is right, but can you maybe unpack some of this? Why are people jumping to the assumption that it might, in fact, be race that's causing this? What basis is there for that? Is there racism in the chartered accountant sphere, as far as we can tell from the outside? What are your thoughts?
I think it's just thematically in vogue. It's just the narrative is if there's something wrong, it must be racism. I mean, that is part of the assumption of critical race theory and the Black Lives Matter thing. It's not, is there racism? It is, there is racism, and how do we find it and expound and then, you know, get rid of it. But there's such obvious nonsense there. Bless you for how many ever times is necessary. There's such obvious nonsense there. I didn't go and become a chartered accountant because I would suck at it. And it's got nothing to do with my skin color. According to this man's thinking, I should be a high flying, you know, chartered accountant because I'm from the social middle class. He seems to hate. I've got the skin color he seems to imply. But the problem is I'm really, really bad at accounting. I mean, I had it I had to have it as a subject in grade 8 and 9. And I think I got 34% or something because I just couldn't get myself to care about making, you know, it just wasn't my thing. I would be awful at it, and I never had any interest in it. So, but the problem is, it's just so convenient to go, there's a problem. It must be racism. Well, let's test this. I've got a solution. I've got a mad suggestion here. Let's remove the, you know, bit of the application form where you indicate your race. Because if you are a black student and there is the systemic racism, how do they know they should discriminate against you? Well, give you an exam number so that it can't see your race. And then on the application or submission, remove the idea that people have to disclose their race, because then, according to this guy's thinking, it would not be possible to discriminate against these people writing these exams because no one knows their race. It's shocking how something like non-racialism could perhaps be the answer to possible racialism. But the nonsense here is just profound, on the sense that if anything goes wrong, it must be racism. Yeah, sometimes there's racism. Sometimes there is racism, and South Africa is perhaps one of the countries that best exemplifies systemic racism for the last 100 years. But it's too lazy to jump to racism, and you don't get any step closer to a solution if you just cry racism. And that's the problem I have with this narrative, is we are turning into the society that cries racism. One day racism is going to come a knocking, and it's going to devour many, many people, because we've just been so dulled to death by this constant race baiting. But then the second point, and very, very briefly, in if you take the 2008 grade one class and you take them all the way to grade 12, less than 5% of the grade ones. So that's fewer than, if you take a class of 100, fewer than 5 kids in that grade one class will leave matric 12 years later in the state school sector with more than 50% in maths. And that is a shocking indictment of this government's record on education. And if we start with finger pointing, that's a bloody obvious target. Verwoerd had this idea that black South Africans don't need a good education. Let's give them Bantu education. And now we have a government that doesn't even bother. So we have 100 years of just government. It's black South Africans being made poor by the National Party and being kept poor by the ANC. And I just think that it is shocking. So it's just lazy to point the finger to racism always. Grow up, get yourselves towards a solution, get the facts, get the data, and actually be part of the solution, not the problem.
Right. I think it's worth emphasizing that final point there, that South Africa routinely ranks one of the lowest countries in terms of maths and science education in the world. There've been several of these studies which compare maths and science quality education between countries, and South Africa is usually out of 150 in the bottom 5 or so. So it is definitely a source of the problem. If you just don't have anyone who can do maths, surprise, surprise, you're not going to have a lot of accountants coming out there, because the education system is so poor. There's another point which our CEO France suggested this morning, which is that this idea of the accounting industry as this kind of monolithic white institution, where the only black members are these kind of junior people trying to come in and like eke out a place for themselves in this industry, doesn't really bear with the facts of reality. I mean, of course, you know, the people quoted in this particular story that I was taking from on IOL, these senior chartered accountants and senior officials in the Chartered Accountants Society are all black themselves. This is not an industry this is not 1994. The industry does not look like it did then. It's very different to how it was. And they're already, I mean, they're kind of almost accusing themselves here of racism, which is a somewhat strange thought. Sarah, do you have any thoughts on that? Am I being ridiculous?
No, I think the problem is that because the requirement is to create an industry that looks like the demographics of the country, you have to do quite a lot of fiddling with the process to get people there. And the reality is that, I mean, my oldest son, when he started varsity, he went with a friend who registered for accounting. And my son was very amused because, you know, 90% of the guys there were Indian. So the point is that as soon as you start to try and squeeze in to meet the demographics, you're going to fail, because it means to meet those numbers, you're not going to follow the sort of logical succession of people coming out and going into the industry. As long as you try to play that absolute numbers game, it's going to fail. You're going to have to end up pushing through poor kids who just aren't suited to it, don't achieve the marks for it. And at every stage, as you go up through schooling and into university, more and more allowance is made until you hit the real world. And of course, these assessments would be about how you perform in the real world. And so it all becomes unraveled. Of course, one is curious to know whether any of the young students who failed their recent assessments were employed by what we'll call black firms, but let that be as it be. I think that's really the essence of the problem with BEE. It is absolutely artificial. I mean, there is no area in the world, successful parts of the world, where a group of people succeed over another group of people. People tend to be attracted to different things. And sometimes you'll find more white, sometimes you'll find more black, sometimes you'll find an even number. I mean, you have to really be immersed in Marxist thinking and the heading towards our socialist utopia to believe that everyone it somewhere will fit in exactly the proportions of the population. It's not only bizarre, it's very dangerous because you're creating expectations that can't be met. Not to mention what we've already mentioned about a poor education. So the one on top of the other is just a recipe for failure.
Right. So we've mentioned this before, but Malaysia, of course, is a country that has had very strict affirmative action policies for quite a long time, for several decades, I think. And surprise, surprise, they have not really changed the demographics of a lot of how their economy looks. I mean, I think Malaysians who are benefited by these laws have slightly improved their position. But there's been no discernible impact. So if the argument is that BEE will make black South Africans rich or wealthy, or at least at the same level as white South Africans, that alone is not going to do anything.
And can I just point out, if you look at the data on inequality, the biggest gap is between the poorest black South Africans and the richest black South Africans. That's the largest interval of inequality that we see in the South African population. It's not between white and black. It's between the poorest blacks and the richest blacks. The gap between the richest whites and the poorest whites is actually narrower. And the same goes for Indians and colored people. It's really this distortion of black empowerment. And if we want to look at the facts of what has BEE achieved? Well, in 2004, the year before BEE is introduced, unemployment 26%. First quarter of 2020, in other words, before COVID, that's up to 30.1%. Black unemployment in 2005, in the year that BEE is introduced, 31.5%. First quarter of 2020, before COVID, that's up to 33.8%. So unemployment generally and black unemployment, no discernible improvement to be found from BEE. But let's see what has changed, really. Economic freedom ranking, 2004, the year before BEE, 53. 2019, 68. Economic competitiveness ranking from the World Economic Forum, 2004, 41. 2019, 60th. So it's just isn't just the data from the IRR opinion poll showing that 85% of black South Africans haven't benefited from BEE. There's no data basis to conclude that BEE has been anything other than impotent at best and toxic at worst. And that takes us back to the Didi and the Dudu story.
Can I just point that perhaps we might have fudged it a little unintentionally, is that they talk specifically in this article about the poor performance by African students. So they're not saying black students, i.e. they're not saying colored, Indian, and African. They are saying African students. And I suspect that's partly because particularly the Indian students who will have gone into accounting will have gone very distinctly for very distinct reason with parental support and in some cases perhaps pressure behind them. But, you know, it's an area that is particularly attracts Indian students. So, and you notice the article only talks about African students. So in fairness, it's probably the problem is with African students. And I'm sure there is a huge amount to be looked at from top to bottom, from start to finish.
Right. And can I just say as a concluding thought here, because we don't have much time left, I suspect that if there is still lingering racism in the decision-making around whether to promote or employ black accountants, some of it is certainly going to come from BEE itself. There's an assumption, whether true or not, that all black candidates have been pushed through, you know, because of BEE. And there's always this lingering question, are they here because of their race or they're here because of that? And this toxic cauldron that's created by BEE has only worsened race relations now. So a black candidate who is a completely competent, hardworking, solid dude who's going to be able to make it fine in the industry is going to be looked at askance by some of his white colleagues, who will assume that he got there until he has like gone the extra mile to prove otherwise that he got there because of BEE, which is unfair on him, of course. So it's increasingly unclear, apart from David Mabuza, who is benefiting from BEE. Anyway, I think that is all the time we have. So thank you very much for listening. We hope that you have a good day, and we will see you tomorrow on the next Daily French Show. Cheers.